Okay, so the summary of that that I spoke about a couple of Sundays ago is God gives us five things. He gives us five things. He gives us a very good place to belong physically and also in a community socially. We have the male and the female, and obviously a model for marriage there, but it also works for friendship as well. For those of us who aren't married, this works equally well for friendship. So do remember that. Friendships are God-given and really important to us. He gives us a job to do, as he gave Adam and Eve a job to do, and that included in retirement, included the workplace that you're in, or a volunteer service that you do, or also work at school. Okay, work at school. And there were a few groans when I said that last time. So you get a chance to do that tomorrow, guys. Go back and get into it. Also, he provides for their needs as he provides for our needs. And that's an ongoing major concern for us, isn't it? Trusting God for his provision for us, individually and collectively. And then he gives instructions about what not to do. Now, the other thing that I did not mention is that he gives Adam and Eve a free will, a choice to make choice, well, the ability to make choices for themselves. Don't underestimate that. It's incredibly important. The power to be able to make decisions. And sometimes those moral decisions can have significant consequences. Sometimes it's the little things that add up and count in our lives. But the ability to make choices is an interesting one. Now, introduce the tree. Introduce the serpent. They enter the story, and the serpent questions God's reliability. Is he really able to do these things for you? That's the question we are often encountering ourselves as we live in this world. Is he really that faithful? Is he really going to provide for you, Ian? Is he going to really provide for you, Kelly? He does. I know, that's great. But that's the question we ask ourselves, isn't it? Well, one of the questions we ask ourselves. So the serpent enters, and notice in the story, they hide. Once they eat from the apple, they hide. God comes walking in the garden, because he was amongst that community, and he says, "Where are you?" He knows where they are. He says, "Where are you?" He says, "Oh, we're hiding because we ate the tree and we know we're naked," right? Which is just simply a falling from innocence. But you notice what happens. God asks some questions and Adam blames someone else. Who does he blame? Eve. Who does Eve blame? The serpent. This is something that continues on, and I speak from personal experience with our closest relationships and also in work. We want to avoid having any shame or blame placed upon us, so we can often attempt to point the finger to someone else and say it's their fault. Yeah? It's a defense mechanism that we have from when we're very, very young. We'll point the finger at our brother or sister and say, "It's them who did it." Don't we? Yes, we do. Do the Wheeler kids do that? No, Abby's nodding. It's something we all do, but beware of it because it's a temptation to avoid that shame of being responsible for something that maybe was not good. So the result of the poor decision to eat of that fruit was that they lost all the good stuff. They lost it. They lost a really good place to belong, a really good community. They lost the job to do, the calling in God's kingdom or in his garden. They lost the trust and the provision for their needs. Oh, we have to do that ourselves. And they also, to a certain degree, lost the ability to make some choices. And I'll talk about that in a moment. Now, this is the doctrine of the fall, or original sin. And this is the belief that all of us inherit a tainted nature from Adam. From Adam. That all of us inherit that selfish gene, so to speak. So we're all tainted by those original decisions that were made in the garden, the story of that. Now, this doctrine was developed quite late in the church. Actually, it was the 3rd century that St. Augustine came up with this doctrine. It's a bit like the Trinity. You won't find it mentioned in the Bible. The word fall is not mentioned in Genesis. The word sin is not mentioned in this chapter. But it was something that was developed later by the fathers or the forebears of the church. But I believe it's a doctrine that does hang together very well. I'm going to explore why it does. It was the Apostle Paul who began to connect the dots. In Romans 5:14, he said, "Death reigned from the time of Adam to the time of Moses, even over those who did not sin by breaking a command." So, I'm going to get something. So, Matt, if you can put that golf ball out. This is Andrew Harvey Green's bowl. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to try and bowl it straight at the kitty, which is that golf ball there. And you're going to notice what happens. Okay. Okay. Nowhere near, was it? Thanks, Matt. Nowhere near. And do you know the reason for that? What is the reason why that won't bowl in a straight line? Who said that? Yeah, I need to practice a bit more. It's that technique. No, it's not user error. It's a bias. There's a bias. There's a weight in here that causes it to veer in the direction of the weight. Now, sin is like that. Sin is like that. It causes us to veer off in the direction of somewhere else except the mark. Now, it's very interesting. The Jews, or the Hebrews, they don't believe in original sin. They don't believe that this story is a story about when sin entered the world and stayed with humankind. This is a Christian doctrine. It's a Christian doctrine. So, sin entered the world and affected all of us. So we've all got this bias. But the Hebrew word for sin, is not just about being bad or being disobedient. It includes judgment, but it also more literally means missing the mark. I find this really, really helpful. Really, really helpful. It means missing the mark. Just like this bowl missed the mark of that kitty. Yeah? Now, I've been looking into the doctrine of the fall for the last couple of weeks and wrestling with it. One of my favorite theologians actually doesn't believe in the fall. So that kind of shook my cage a little bit. But guys, it reminded me of something that happened to me. When I came to faith, which is, 50? It's going to 50 years now, is it? No, 40. It's about 40 years ago. I had this experience, and I told the boys, the lads, this on Thursday night in our house church. I had this experience where God spoke to me, very clear. He's never spoken to me in this way again. I said, I'll give it a go. I'll become a Christian. And I was in the next room to my old girlfriend's house, and I was in the next door room, and I thought, I'm a Christian. I should pray. So I got on my knees beside the bed, and I got goosebumps all over my skin, and my heart rate started racing, and this presence came into this room, like a pure white light. Very powerful. And this voice came from that source and said, I love you, my child. And I thought, that's pretty cool. And I went to bed and woke up in the morning feeling pretty good. And my girlfriend wasn't feeling so good, but she later came to faith. But anyway, so within 2 days, we had traveled up to Paraparaumu, to my parents' house, and I got the sudden urge to pray at 1 a.m. I went into the next door room. I knelt down again. It was the same experience, not as intense. Same voice said, "You're a sinner." And I thought, well, that's interesting. And I went back to bed. You're a sinner. Now, guys, this doctrine of the fall, that all of us have fallen short of the glory of God in John's gospel, all of us have fallen short and missed the mark, is a doctrine that Kiwis should love. And the reason is because it makes us all equal. It makes us all on the same page. It's a, for a fancy word, it's an egalitarian doctrine that all of us have fallen short of the glory of God. We have missed the mark. Therefore, we all need someone to help us hit the mark. Now, Paul helps us with this. Paul points towards someone who can remedy that problem. And he says in Romans, he continues, "Consequently, just as one trespass, Adam's trespass, resulted in condemnation for all people, so also one righteous act resulted in justification and life for everyone. For just as through the disobedience of one man, Adam, the many were made sinners, so also through the obedience of one man, the many will be made righteous." Paul was onto it with this doctrine of the fall. He was joining the dots together. This is one of the reasons why Paul is amazing. The church needed him badly at that stage in history. St. Augustine thought it through even further. And then it became a tradition of the church, which I agree with. I think it's really, really useful and it makes sense. So, this toothpaste that was poured out by Patrick, naughty Patrick, the only person that can put it back in there and get $50 is not Lucy. Sorry, Lucy. But it's who we're going to celebrate when we have communion in a few minutes. It's Jesus Christ. And we're going to give that money to, unless Lucy performs a miracle, we're going to give that money back to Jesus, because we're going to give it to Te Kororia for the glory of God's glory in Te Kororia, which we're encouraging everyone to support and give for and be involved with, because it's ours for God's glory. Because Jesus Christ is the only one that can do what needed to be done. Amen? That's why it's good news, isn't it? Okay, let's respond. Let's have the band up, please. Let's sing about that. We're going to sing Amazing Grace, My Chains Are Gone.